big week five preview show for you here today as Andy Behrens joins me at the top of the show to discuss three burning questions he wants answered and three matchups that deserve your attention. Big test on the docket for the Washington offense. Can they pass said test? Will Sam Darnold make it through his revenge game? And it is a revenge game against the New York Jets unscathed. Then Tara Roberts joins me in the back half of the show to discuss the make or break players you need to be considering for your final flex spot this week in order to win. And you want to win. So let's get into it. No more talking. Let's get into the show. It's Friday, October 4th. I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast presented by Toyota, the official automotive partner of the NFL. And it is a hell of a day to talk ball. And joining me to do just that is my good pal, Andy Behrens. Andy, what's going on, buddy?
Hell of a day to talk ball. This is a fun week. I thought that last week some of the lineups I was setting were pretty miserable, but they had nothing on week five. Now that we have buys and ton of injuries, I got some crappy lineups out there. These aren't Cam Akers lineups exactly, but I got some really bad lineups out there.
Yeah, I'm in actually the Kings Classic League where I stepped in for your spot actually there at the Fantasy Football Expo, Scott, and I discussed those drafts, and you know, we discussed who, you know, some strange players that we had drafted, things like that. The waiver wire on those two leagues are ultra depressing. Every now and again, you know, I'll just go poking around there because I've got some worthless players on my bench that if you're starting them, your fantasy season is over. And these have like what, four, like two flex spots, you got to start some weirdo players, things like that. Every now and again, I'll just go like scouring through the waiver wire and just like, okay, who's the most rostered player that's, you know, on the waiver wire who's available? Usually it's like Khalil Herbert or something like that, 8%, 5% rostered, but he's on the waiver wire in these leagues. I did look yesterday, right before bed, like a very healthy, normal person doing the, you know, in bed, scrolling the waiver wire. And I was like, oh, Cam Akers, 30% rostered, dropped in one of these leagues where you got to start a billion people, like just rage dropped. I don't know who it was. Some analyst that you guys would probably know, rage dropped Cam Akers. So that's where we're at in these leagues.
And then in the Kings Classic, you end up spending like obscene amounts of fab on the worst players, the very worst players, because you get toward the end of the season and it's going to be a name like Cam Akers and you're still sitting on $45 and you're like, shoot, 41 for Cam Akers. Let's do it. You know, it's just, which is obviously dumb and not going to work out. It's doomed.
Well, who I got to ask you now that you said you set in some weird lineups, who's the weirdest player that you're starting this week?
How weird is Wandell Robinson?
Pretty weird.
Yeah, pretty weird, right?
Pretty weird. But you might get no Malik Nabers in that game. So
yeah, I don't know that helps Wandale that much. I mean, how much higher can Wandale go after a ridiculous target total last week? Samaje Perine is probably my weirdest, like most hopeless player that I'm starting somewhere. Yeah, it's not pretty.
Yeah, I mean, I was in one of the Kings Classic leagues, where I'm 3-1, by the way, so shout out to me.
Oh, yeah.
I had to pull Cam Akers out of a starting spot, and I got to put Elijah Moore in there. So I'm hoping that my takes from 3 years ago and the Washington Commander secondary can bring me some glory here and get me out of a tough spot in a flex spot. I've Trey Sermon in one of the other leagues, and I'm like, thank God I got Trey Sermon. That's really going to bail me out of one of those flex spots. So shout out to you all out there who are listening to this show. I know you don't care about our fantasy teams, but this is just a reminder that you all out there that play in these like very normal fantasy leagues where you're just starting one flex player, you guys really have it good. I know it's tough when you bench the wrong person, you get that one receiver that you put out there, he gets 5 points, and oh, this one on my bench, he got 15. Damn it. The process was right for this other guy. I know that's frustrating. It can't possibly be more frustrating than I got to start Elijah Moore or Samaje Perine and really hope this goes well. So, all right, that's enough blabbering about our fantasy teams. Let's talk about the week ahead here. And this is how the preview show works if you're new. Andy joins the first part of the show every Friday He talks through three burning fantasy questions that he wants answered every single week and three matchups that he says deserve your attention. And we do have some really good ones to talk about this week. Then in the back half of the show, Tara Roberts joins me to identify the make or break players that could determine the outcome of your fantasy matchups this weekend. And then we will end the show with our keys to winning each week. I really hope Elijah Moore is somehow on Tara's make or break players. All right. With that, let's get into the three burning fantasy questions that Andy wants answered this week. And you're actually going to start in the Elijah Moore Bowl. I'm so pissed I've said Elijah Moore's name like five times to start this show. I just said yesterday on Twitter when, you know, quote tweeting like a fantasy point separation stat, not talking about Elijah Moore. And people are like, aren't you going to acknowledge that Elijah Moore is on the top seven of this list? Like, nope. Actually, for my mental health, I don't discuss Elijah Moore on the internet anymore. But apparently on podcasts, I can still do it. Andy, please take the reins from me so I shut up.
Yeah, that moratorium lasted one day. Good job by you. Great discipline. My first burning question here is about Jaden Daniels, who's been an absolute joy to watch, right? And I'm worried that this question is going to come across as like a sort of side door insult, and I don't mean it that way. Jaden Daniels has been an absolute blast to watch, and I also think like. Did a press conference just the other day where like he was being asked a question about what an incredible start he's off to and how he's this young star and all that. And he like cut it off and was like, I'm still a rookie, which is, you know, which shows great humility and great pragmatism too, I think, right? Like he knows that it gets choppier ahead. So I have a lot of respect for the way he has played. And it's, again, joy to watch. He has played three terrible defenses in a row. Mm-hmm. And that has to be part of the conversation about him, right? It's been the Cardinals, the Bengals, the Giants. He's got a pretty frisky defense this week in Cleveland. And they're not exactly what they were last year, right? By the numbers, they're kind of a middle of the pack defense, but they've still got, you know, Pro Bowlers at every level. They have an absolute game wrecker in Myles Garrett. One of those guys who sometimes he just single-handedly blows up your play. Like you had a good idea, he blew it up because he got to the quarterback in like a second and a half. And so I am super interested to see what this week looks like against a defense that, you know, they're kind of leveling up from where they've been over the last 3 weeks. It's been a nice little, I don't want to call it a layup line exactly. They're all professionals, right? But it's been low degree of difficulty, and it's about to get ratcheted up a little bit. And I am really looking forward to sort of a Myles Garrett, Jaden Daniels, exactly what does this Washington offense look like when they are stressed at a level that they haven't been in a while.
This is a great call out by you. It's something that Nate Tice and I just talked about on the last episode when we were examining Jaden Daniels and his rookie season that in isolation, I think Jaden Daniels is playing great, but there's no question from a production standpoint, the last 2 weeks have come against really poor defenses, and he's about to get on the other end of that spectrum there with Cleveland and then Baltimore in the next week. So how we figure out what happens in this week is going to inform a lot of our week six takes, you know, where like, how are people going to feel totally confident just rolling Jaden Daniels out there as a top five fantasy quarterback like he's been in this next game against Baltimore if he doesn't pass this test in Cleveland? Obviously, we'll revisit that discussion when we do the week six preview show. But for this week, it's a pretty pertinent test because, and I'll point out a couple of things here. Number one, said this yesterday that I think one of the biggest surprises of Washington, there's been a lot of surprises in Washington's offense. One of the biggest ones has been that rookie left tackle Brandon Coleman has played really well. You know, third round rookie. It's just, okay, we're just starting a third round rookie and we're rolling the dice there. That seems pretty risky, but Coleman has held up well. The offensive line overall has played well. I think they're doing the right things from a play calling and design standpoint to help out a shaky offensive line. Okay, well, now you're going against Myles Garrett, Brandon Coleman. This is a bit of a different assignment than some of the other players that you faced the last few weeks. So, like, how does Coleman hold up in that challenge? That's something. The Browns, because Jim Schwartz is a defensive coordinator, this is what they do. They play the most single high coverage in the league. They play a lot of man coverage. They're third most in terms of man coverage rate in the NFL. They lead the NFL in cover one. This is typical of the Browns defense. This is what they do. If you're Jaden Daniels, you have this great arm. You've got a number one receiver in Terry McLaurin that they've been pushing the ball downfield to. This should be a big week for Terry McLaurin in this type of matchup. So it's a big prove it moment for sure for this Washington offense. It's already proven so much to us. We know they're competent. We know that some of the Cliff Kingsbury takes are aging like milk, for sure, from your boy here. But let's see what happens against a really good defense.
Yeah. The other thing that has existed in this offense, and I, you know, it's a little bit, you know, the players just making plays, and it's a little bit the design of the offense generally, like some weird players are getting very open off the snap of the football, and they've had some layup throws to like Zaccheaus and Ertz that I just did not think would be there necessarily. Right. So there's been some real easy buttons in the offense. And again, Cleveland just has enough talent to blow some of that stuff up some of the time, not all the time. Mm-hmm. Daniels, of course, has been doing huge favors to his offensive line, too. Like on his pass attempts, the ball is coming out in, I think his average time to throw on his pass attempts so far is 2.4 seconds, which is, you know, one of the quickest in the league. So he's doing favors for the offensive line. If that, you know, if that early read isn't there, if the easy stuff isn't there, he's often taking off, and you know, every time he takes off, it's 5 or 6 yards. So like they're just in good down and distance situations. Been really fun to watch. But again, this is, you know, maybe since the Bucks were opening week, right? Like maybe since that Bucks game, this is definitely the toughest test that they will have faced. And so we're just sort of answering the question as to whether Jaden Daniels is really, I found him a little bit difficult to rank this week, which maybe I shouldn't have, because he, you know, great rushing quarterback who's got a very, very high floor week to week. But the tough test. So we're about to learn basically if he's truly matchup proof.
Yeah. Andy still has him as QB4. Cause it's like, I mean, hey, yeah. you're what are you going to do? Who are you going to start over? And you're going to start Justin Fields over him. I don't think we're quite at that point yet against the Cowboys. So, I agree with you. And it should be a big game for the run game. Cleveland is 12th in rushing success rate, but this does look like a game where Austin Eckler is going to be back. You should put the ball in Brian Robinson's hands as much as you can. So definitely a big prove it point for there. Let's stick in a AFC North sort of vibe here and talk about the Cincinnati Bengals, Andy Behrens, especially what's going on in their running back room.
Yeah, there's a couple backfields that I could have chosen this week for one of these questions, but I went with the Bengals backfield and Chase Brown. And the question is basically whether he's going to retain last week's gains in terms of his usage. He saw by far the most snaps and the most touches that he ever has in an NFL game last week. It was like 17 touches. He was great. He found the end zone. He looked awesome. I've always been a big believer in the player. He's kind of in a backfield right now where, like, I don't know. I liked Zach Moss when he came into the league too. Like, I kind of like both these guys. I think Zach Moss is a good pro who doesn't go away. But this was a huge surge from Chase Brown last week. And I don't know that either player is going to have a big day against Baltimore, because they've been, you know, they've been a weirdly lopsided defense, generous to the pass, very, very tough against the run so far. So it could be that we don't get some huge day from Chase Brown, but I still think it's a really important question as to whether, you know, if he's seeing 40% of the snaps and like half the backfield touches, that really changes the equation here, because I think he's really got some juice. Like, I've always really, really liked this player. And if he, you know, if he surges and he comes close to leapfrogging Zach Moss, I think that's a big deal.
I feel like the most likely outcome, because you're right, this game against the Ravens is a tough run defense. They are number one in rushing success rate allowed, actually by a lot, 27.8 rushing success rate allowed. Second place is the Chargers. Shout out to the Chargers. Their defense is quietly been very good this year. And it feels like every time they play somebody, particularly last week against the Chiefs, it's like, which we'll talk about in just a second. It's like, what's wrong with the Chiefs offense? We know they do have issues. We'll talk, like I said, we'll talk about them in just a second, but Chargers defense is good. You've got to give credit to the other guys on the side of the ball. But my point that I'm saying is that Ravens are number one, 27.8 rushing success rate allowed. And then the Chargers are number two, 33.3. There's a pretty decent gap between them and the second place team. And there's a big bunch of teams there in that 33% range. So tough matchup for this Bengals backfield. But I'm with you that the biggest thing here is that if we get another game like that from Chase Brown, forget the results, more so the usage perspective. I feel like both of these guys actually will end up being, I don't think, you can tell me if you disagree with this, but I don't know that Chase Brown's ever just going to push Zach Moss completely to the side, you know, to the point where Moss is irrelevant. Most backfields don't work that way, despite what we want in fantasy football. But there could be a scenario where he does hold on to that usage. And then both of these guys are kind of like flex worthy through the bye week gauntlet.
Yeah, it's funny. I was just thinking, I've been doing this job so long that when I first started, we were outraged when somebody was getting like 50% of the snaps and 50% of the touches. That was like, oh, this is a nightmare. How do we figure it out? There's two guys. And now, you know, two guys just feels like a gift. like that's fine. I can absolutely live with two people in this backfield. Both of them is kind of, fun, spicy RB2s. And I think that's what Chase Brown would be. I agree with you. I don't think anybody's trying to make him into an every week, 90% of the snaps, 25, 30 touch guy. I don't think that's going to be his NFL future. But I do think he could manage a role like he had last week, where it's, mid-teens, high teens in terms of touches. He's playing 40% of the snaps. And he hadn't been close to that early in the year. It was like 20% of the snaps, barely on the field. But he's really good in the screen game for that team. He's some cheap and easy yards if they want him. And I thought he showed a lot as a runner. So it's an interesting backfield, because I think over time this is going to be a really productive offense. Again, I don't know what it's going to look like this week, but balance of the season, this is going to be a top 10 offense in all likelihood, and we like running backs who are attached to those.
For now, all of us that rank at Yahoo still have Zach Moss ranked as the top back in this backfield, and he is on average running back 23, low end to like a flex worthy type of guy. And then Chase Brown, like I said, is all of us have him ranked lower, but there's a chance that, so he's not really a guy that we're saying like, you got to start this week or anything like that. Of course, we're talking about the matchup and everything like that, but there's a chance, I think, that those two could flip in a week or two. Totally possible. But again, that would still leave Zach Moss as like a mid running back 3 type, and probably where both these guys end up. Okay. I have a minor Bengals related bone to pick with you, Andy Behrens. And I said this on yesterday's show, and I know you don't listen to the podcast that you're not on. All the episodes that you're on, I know you mainline.
Absolutely.
Of course. But I know, and look, it just came out this morning, so I'm not picking on you about this, but I am a little annoyed at you, Andy Behrens, and it's ironic that you are wearing a tight end U shirt. Eric All. Okay, this tight end that's got 4 catches on 4 targets in 3 straight games. The real fantasy hipsters online can't shut up about this guy. Is like, if he's on waiver wires in your dynasty league is basically a bunch of nerds and goofballs and people who don't pay attention. Like, let's get serious about dynasty fantasy football here. Everybody, some of this Eric All guy, he's an Iowa tight end. And, I don't know a damn thing about him. Andy Behrens, I never heard of this guy until he starts like catching four passes every single game. So why have you not given, maybe it was an episode I wasn't on in August, perhaps, give me the benefit of the doubt there. Why don't I know anything about this Eric All guy when you are Mr. Iowa tight end?
First of all, not a homegrown Iowa tight end. Let's be clear about that.
Not an organic, non-GMO, like this is your high, right, now you're highbrow, right, in Iowa tight, right, ends.
We didn't raise him from a pup. He's, he was a sort of later ad Iowa tight end. We'll claim him if he really works out. He's welcome to join the Pantheon.
Only if he works out though.
He's also like the second best tight end on last year's Iowa roster too. I don't have a problem with him. He's just not like alone on this team, and he's nowhere near the top of the receiving hierarchy. But yeah, like promising player. And the thing with the dynasty guys is, man, anybody who flashes for a second, and they all freak out about the long term potential, and oh, he's the dynasty tight end, whatever, 5, 4, 3, whatever. I don't know. I didn't. He had a very short lived Iowa career, so he doesn't get full Iowa credit with me. And again, Luke Lachey was the Iowa guy on last year's roster that I think you will want long term. Not even in the league yet.
Any relation to Nick Lachey, or is that just a coincidence?
Not that I know of, but I can't rule it out.
All right, cool. So on the fantasy note, yeah, Eric All ran 18 routes to 38. To Mike Gesicki in the last 2 weeks, but he does have 8 targets to just 6 for Gesicki. So situation to monitor, but I did want to pick that bone with Andy Behrens, because I'm a little upset. I know nothing about this guy, and he goes to the best collegiate university, especially for tight ends. All right, let's move on. This is enough of this Eric All discussion. He's come up way too much on this podcast here. Let's discuss the Kansas City Chiefs, who maybe could use a guy like Eric All, because Andy, who scored points for this team?
Yeah, the question I put in the document was just like Kansas City's remaining skill players and then just waves arms, right? This is a wild situation. To lose Rashee Rice, Hollywood Brown, and Isaiah Pacheco is crazy. So we are going to be asking a lot of some weirdos now, right? Mm-hmm. Like Juju Smith-Schuster reenters the picture as sort of that, short range. Maybe he can satisfy some of what Rashee Rice was doing in a far less explosive and less reliable way. We're gonna lean on Justin Watson to some extent again. The backfield isn't clear to me. I know that Kareem Hunt, very popular ad each of these last 2 weeks, and he's coming off a productive week. I don't like just my own initial watch of that game and my rewatch of that game. Like, I thought he was fine. And if you want to tell me that you think he was a little better than he was last year, I'm open to it. It wasn't a particularly flashy game. I think he hit every hole he needed to hit, and he got the yards that were immediately in front of him. I don't know that I saw anything that means that Clyde Edwards-Helaire can't step into a huge role in Kansas City's backfield, though. So like everything is just unknown, and they're all tied to a quarterback who I think is still the best in the league, right? So I can't say that there's no upside there, but it's just such a rogues gallery of names, and it is a true guessing game right now. I have no idea who's going to lead that team in receiving this week. It's probably Travis Kelce, but until they actually add someone, and I think we expect them to try to be aggressive in the trade market. Obviously Devontae Adams, the biggest name, but there are probably some other names who are going to be available. I just don't have the slightest idea what this is going to look like, but I'm not sure it's going to be the Kareem Hunt show, and I'm not sure it's going to be the Travis Kelce show.
Man. And they're going against a Saints defense that's a top five pass defense.
Yeah.
It's not exactly like they're coming into a cakewalk matchup here. And obviously it's fantasy podcast. We focus on the skill position players. We focus on the fact that Isaiah Pacheco, Marquise Brown, and Rashee Rice are, we are taping this Thursday late morning, almost afternoon. We don't know what is going on with Rashee Rice yet. It's crazy. Yeah. Okay. It's crazy that it's been this long. Whole separate discussion. The fact that these guys are probably going to miss significant time this year is just wild. You're right. But the biggest problem, honestly, to me with watching the Chiefs offense is I do think the offensive line has taken a step back in multiple spots. Obviously we know they're cycling the left tackle position because Kingsley Suamatia did not work out really as just the day one starting left tackle as a rookie. Wanya Morris is back there. That's been an issue. Some of the interior play has again been an issue. That was kind of a problem to start last year too. I'm sure Trey Smith and the boys will kick it into overdrive. They'll do the Travis Kelce. They'll kick it into overdrive when the games really matter. But it's definitely an issue on the offensive line right now. Just for context, too, Andy has Patrick Mahomes ranked as his 12th quarterback this week. And you're not exactly just going to get the guys ahead of him off the waiver wire. The least rostered player is Justin Fields at 51%. So Andy's not sitting here telling you, and really no one that ranks at Yahoo is sitting here telling you, you got to pick up, Trevor Lawrence or Derek Carr and just start them over Patrick Mahomes. But when you could tell me how you, when you rank players, when I rank a guy at QB 12 or QB 13, whatever, I am definitely telling you it is within the range of outcomes that he can get outscored by Geno Smith, Dak Prescott, Kirk Cousins, any of these dudes here this week.
Yeah. Under normal circumstances, I don't feel different in any significant way about everyone from the QB 10 to the QB 18, right? Right. It's totally. That's usually a very tight group. And when you look at weekly scoring leaders, you're going to see people very clustered in that range too. There's not a ton of separation. One of the questions that you have to ask yourself is, and with Patrick Mahomes, you always kind of lean on the side of the ceiling for Patrick Mahomes in any given week is full of miracles, and it gets them to a huge point total. And he can erupt in any given week. He's great. They've they've never had so few weapons around him, right? And it's probably a temporary thing. Pacheco hopefully comes back later in the season. Hopefully they are able to address receiver in some sort of meaningful way via trade. But like right now, I don't know. We're going to be asking Xavier Worthy to do things that maybe he's not ready to do. There's just so little explosiveness outside of Worthy in this offense right now. I don't know exactly where the points and yards come from. So it's really difficult to talk yourself into this, you know, top 5 week from Mahomes, I think, given just the current supporting cast.
All right, Andy. So those are the three questions you wanted answered this week. We got a listener question on the email.
Oh.
And look, I kind of want to do this every single week. So folks out there, if you want to send in not a like straight start sit question, I want this to be bigger picture than just like, do I play this guy or that guy? Okay. Cause it's just, I realize I ranted about my stupid flex spot to start the show, but for the most part, we want to keep it a little bigger picture than your specific lineup question. But like, if you have a big burning question that you want answered every single week, feel free to send it into fantasymailbag@yahoosports.com. I liked this one that we got from Sugarfoot. Sent in this email, which again is pretty crazy. This person has actually reached out to the show before, which is one reason I wanted it in. One, I thought it was a good idea to get some users and listeners in the show, but also because this is a pretty good rant. They start the email with the subject line, "I'm an idiot. Nico Collins rant again, year two, SMH. Hello again. I reached out last year because I'm the dummy that picked up DJ Moore over Nico Collins right after his explosion on a Thursday night football game. I play in that insane league that I detail below. So for background, it's a 10-team, 2-quarterback league, you know, blah, 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 all the typical stuff. The interesting dynamic is that there's no IR spot and only 3 bench spots. So it forces, which is just, you're begging to hate yourself with this. So it forces us to add/drop talent, keep the waiver wire deeper, and forces us to make painful trades or add/drops because you can't hoard talent on your bench. Well, I did it again this year. I passed on Nico Collins. I drafted Stephon Diggs, who hasn't been a complete bust, but alas, nowhere near the elite production Nico Collins has had this year. Also, as a deep QB2, I drafted Caleb Williams over Jaden Daniels. Well, I'm here wondering, am I a dummy for, this is the bigger picture question I'd like to discuss. Well, I'm here wondering, am I a dummy for waiting on Cooper Kupp, or should I quickly add the likes of, again, this is a deep waiver wire because of 3 bench spots, Jackson Smith and Jigba, George Pickens, Jordan Addison, Xavier Worthy, or Xavier Leggett. For context, again, the waiver wire is deep. I know you all are not the spoon feeding podcast, but just tell me, be patient. I feel like injury timelines have been harder to discern this year, this season, more than in years past. Thanks as always, Sugarfoot. I wanted to just throw this to you, Andy, because I think this is a problem that people are facing because there have been so many injuries. Yeah. I get people that send me their lineup and it's just like, who do I drop to pick up this player that I need to play this week? Obviously most waiver wires are not going to have damn George Pickens and all these guys on it, you know, so take this specific league out of it. When you're dealing with lineup management, right, and there's all these injuries, you don't have IR spots. Not everybody has IR spots like us sickos where we have 4 or 5 or whatever. There's no consequence to the bench. How do you advise people manage that when, like, yeah, we want to wait on Cooper Kupp, all these guys and this stuff, but like, we also need to score some damn points.
Yeah. These are these are really the toughest drops, right? Like you can work yourself into a state of confusion, looking at like all your backup running backs that you've got on your bench. And can I drop Trey Benson or should I drop Trey Sermon or should I drop, you know, like you can, but those aren't really difficult drops. The difficult ones are it's Cooper frickin' Kupp. And he could save my season in the second half, except I don't know if he's going to be back in week 6, week 8, week 9. There's a level of uncertainty there. And then, you know, also it's Cooper Kupp. He could re-injure this thing. He could be dealing with it all year. Like that is a much more difficult cut, but sometimes you have to make it. Like if you're, you know, you're a 1-3 team right now, you're an 0-4 team right now, there's no week 6, there's no week 7. You're like, you're managing matchup to matchup. And so some of this just comes down to like, am I a team that can afford to look a month ahead? Many can't. The name that jumps out from the list of free agents in this league is George Pickens, who is very clearly going to have rest of season value. And he's not just, we're not speculating on whether George Pickens is going to be a thing. He's a thing. It's not quite like, you know, we all like the game that we just got out of look at that was super promising, but you know, that might not be an every week occurrence. With Pickens, they're going to work him really hard, and he's like the one guy in that offense that we can feel good about in any given week, even if they're, you know, it's not exactly a dynamic passing offense necessarily. They're not trying to put the ball in the air 40 times, and yet Pickens is still going to get his opportunities and probably get his numbers most weeks. So I would make that trade. I would make that exchange cut for Pickens. I think I'd feel fine about it. I also want to compliment the format of this league, and I know it seems maddening to people, but this is something that Pianowski and I talk about all the time. Like, it's really fun to have a league or two where you have to make very difficult choices, and the waiver wire is actually full of some fun names. And the reason that it's full of some fun names is that you can't stash everybody in the league. You can't hide all the backup running backs until the starter goes down. Like, I like a league that forces difficult choices. I like a league that doesn't have IR spots quite often. I have one league in which we have, if we don't have unlimited IR spots, we have like 8 or something. We have a stupid total of IR spots. So like, everybody is stashed. Nobody's out there. We have huge benches too. And it just, I don't know, makes the league a little bit less fun, because you're week to week, you have, your options are dreadful.
Yeah, I'm with you. It's definitely fun. And the words of Scott from the Panic Meter Pod are echoing in my head that, look, most of you out there listening to this show are not going to have to cut Cooper Kupp, but you're occasionally going to, as Scott said, if you don't make one regretful drop during the fantasy season, like, you're not trying hard enough. And especially if you are, like, you're in a hole here, you're behind the eight ball in terms of the record and the rest of your league, you've got to make some pretty painful cuts. And yeah, you might have to cut, I don't know, some rookie that it might be the second half hero, you know, the Amon-Ra St. Brown of this year, the rookie that hasn't established himself yet, but is going to win people leagues down the stretch. Maybe that is Xavier Leggett. I don't know. Like, you might have to cut that player at some point, because they're not going to start. I mean, Leggett probably can start for your lineup right now, so it's a bad example. But you guys get what I'm saying here. Like, you got to occasionally do that to try to win weeks right away. So I thought that was an important discussion to have, because there's so many injuries right now that people are probably having a tough time managing their benches. And I think it's just a good reminder, like, hey, you got to live in the moment every now and again. You can't have all the injured players stashed and all of the, like, late upside ticket players stashed.
I will say, I don't know that Sugarfoot, actually a Sugarfoot, right? Sugar.
Correct.
Is that the flavor of the foot? I don't know that Sugarfoot mentioned their record specifically, but, like, you know, we harped on the idea in the preseason that, you know, you want to try to win September. You want to try to get out to a hot start. And one of the things that we talked about was, like, you know, what the playoff probabilities are for teams that start 0-3 versus 3-0. You start 0-3 in like a public league last year, you had a 12% chance of making your league's playoffs. So you can only imagine what that's like for 0-4, right? So, like, if you're an 0-4, 1-3 team, you really do need to make it all about week 5. Like, you got to get that win. Otherwise, you're in a situation, even if you're that team that, you know, you're 5th in total points, you don't feel like your team is as bad as its record, man, you can't afford a loss in week 5.
All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk through 3 matchups that Andy says deserve your attention. All right, Andy, let's get international here for our first game that we're talking through. Jets, Vikings in London. I will say, I always make a point to say this on the pod, especially for my West Coast bros and ladies. Don't be going out there on Saturday night, getting hammered and waking up late. You forgot to set your lineup. Okay. There's a lot of players that matter in this league, in this particular game, and we're going to talk through them here. So you make sure you make sure you get that thing set, or especially I would advise, take it easy, drink some freaking water, get you some mineral salt in your water, drink it between each drink if you're going out on Saturday, so that you can get up early, ready to rock. Okay, we can discuss other things, whatever, but that's a big important part of this. Make sure you are in the mental headspace and the physical space to be able to get up early and get your fantasy lineup right for this game.
Yeah, I don't love every London game that comes around, but man, this one's really fun. And first of all, you said it, like, this game involves like 3 guys who were probably among the first 12 players taken in your draft, right? Like, the stars in this thing are huge. It involves a couple of the greatest like surprise stories of this year in both Sam Darnold and Braylon Allen on the other side. So we've just got, there's a lot of fun names here, and the Vikings are in one place and the Jets are in a very different place. And the body language was bad for the Jets last week. They're saying some weird things in the media. We got Garrett Wilson wondering whether maybe they should try some new stuff. You know, they're maybe kicking the tires on Davante Adams. Like there's a lot going on with the Jets that is not even necessarily on field. Aaron Rodgers a little bit dinged. You know, there's just a lot of storylines that you can pick from on the Jets side. And then, man, Minnesota has just been a blast. And Sam Darnold is playing his best football. It's a, you know, I guess you could force a Sam Darnold revenge game narrative onto this, although Adam Gase is not on the other side. So it feels a little bit ill-fitting. But there
I don't think it's a force, buddy. I think it is a revenge game for Sam Darnold, who certainly at this point, you know, is talking about it just feels so different to play in Kevin O'Connell's offense and have all the answers and things like that.
Yeah.
Look, the coaches and the GM and stuff might not be there. Same dude still owns a team. Same colors are still on those jerseys. I'm sure Sam wants to go out here and remind people I didn't fail. They failed me.
I guess that just feels like an entirely different NFL era to me. It feels so long ago because some of the names that were attached to it have just not been on our radar in a long time. But you're right. I'm sure it's very fresh in Sam Darnold's head. And he's obviously attached to incredible playmakers. Really fun to watch that Flores defense against Aaron Rodgers here. What a dud from the Jets last week. Like what a crazy dud from them. But also this is like this is a pretty frisky Jets defense against that Vikings offense. So this is just a fun one for a whole bunch of reasons.
Yeah, Sam Darnold last played for the Jets in 2020. I think Joe Douglas became the GM of the Joe Douglas, Mechanicsville, Virginia. Joe Douglas. Yeah. He did become the GM in 2019.
I didn't think about that. Joe Douglas, I guess, would be the connective.
You thought I couldn't be salvaged. You thought I couldn't be salvaged, so you decided to ship my ass out of town and get Zach Wilson. Where's Zach Wilson on the sideline, huh? Oh, he's in Denver doing God knows what with old Sean Payton there. A lot of connective tissue here, but I do think it's a revenge game for Sam Darnold for sure. I don't know that Sam Darnold's a fantasy starter, just because if you look at if you're in a super flex league and you've been riding the Sam Darnold glory train, like for sure you're doing it. Again, this week I'm gonna have to do it in a spot where I've got Sam Darnold, but like the Jets defense we know is great against the pass. It's not gonna keep you from playing Justin Jefferson. It might make you not want to play Jordan Addison, those type of guys. But they have been not that great against the run this year. 27th in rushing success rate. So I do see this coming off his own revenge game as a pretty nice game for Aaron Jones. Jets offense, man, we're playing all these guys, but it's more of like an exploratory. I think Garrett Wilson wants to try new things, like the throw to Garrett Wilson plays. I know he's got a lot of targets, and I agree with him. His route tree definitely needs to be mixed up. He's running like three routes: go routes, out routes, slant routes. That's it. It's not going to be a well-designed offense with Nate Hackett out there, and I don't think Davante Adams is going to come in here and save that. So we'll see what they can do against one of the best defenses in the NFL. I don't really have a lot of confidence in the Jets offense here.
Yeah, no, I don't either. Aaron Rodgers is coming off a game where he was like, you know, I think I made the joke on Twitter, like his expression quite often harkened back to the, oh man, Marquez Valdes-Scantling just dropped a pass. Like it was a lot of the eye rolling and a lot of the slumped shoulders. Like he looked a little bit defeated. Just an absolute mess last week. And I think in Garrett Wilson's case, you can, you know, anybody who visits like Sertan Island, probably, you know, we should probably not expect big things from them, and it's fine. Hopefully there are better weeks from Garrett Wilson ahead. I assume there will be. I think he's a great player. But if he's making noise about, hey, maybe we should try some new stuff, then we clearly don't have everybody on the same page. And if everybody's not on the same page, it's just a bad week to face that Vikings defense.
Yeah, probably would have helped Aaron Rodgers if you had been there all offseason. You know, maybe getting that chemistry. And you know, I'm saying that would have been helpful. Camp matters. Okay. Let's go on to another game here. AFC North matchup between the Baltimore Ravens and the Cincinnati Bengals.
Yeah, I love this one. I love it in part because it's a, you know, a sort of classic divisional matchup. We have Joe Burrow saying this week, hey, this is a big game, and we need this game. And I have to play perfect if we're going to win this game. This basically was basically the series of quotes. And he's not wrong. Like, they got to get a win. They can't, you know, they can't slip further below 500. It is a huge game for them. That offense has been really fun, and they've gotten it back together. And like, the offense is clearly not the problem. Chase is playing really well. We already talked about Chase Brown and Zach Moss. They get T. Higgins back. So it's like a fully operational version of Cincinnati's offense. But they're facing, you know, I still don't know what Baltimore is exactly defensively, because they've had so much turnover. Mm-hmm. They look really good against the run. They look terrible for the most part, you know, in terms of total yards anyway, against the pass. They're not exactly the defense they were last year. That offensively, these last two games, they've barely put the ball in the air. 33 pass attempts for Lamar total last two games. Derrick Henry utterly unstoppable last week. People are dropping Mark Andrews, and I can't even put up a great argument. Like, I get that why you're dropping Mark Andrews. If the game plan for Baltimore is we're gonna run it down your throat, then Mark Andrews isn't even going to be on the field a lot. Like, so that's a huge problem. And they really might be able to run it down Cincinnati's throats. This could just be another game in which, you know, the run, and we're going to time a possession you to death, and we're going to leave town with a win. That might be exactly what this is. But Cincinnati needs it in a big way. And I'm excited for this one.
Yeah, Baltimore right now, great matchup against the Bengals run defense. 31st in rushing success rate allowed are the Cincinnati Bengals. I posted this on Twitter yesterday, but Derrick Henry has taken 21% of his rush attempts from pistol this season, 51.8 yards per game, most among running backs, 23.5% explosive run rate, second most among running backs, 8.9 yards before contact per rush, most among running backs. Like,
it's crazy.
That, like, the way they've perfectly kind of got what Lamar and Derrick Henry do well. They're blending that using pistol, so it kind of splits the difference between shotgun and under center. It allows Lamar to be comfortable more in a shotgun type offense, and allows Derrick Henry to get that head of steam, as the yards before contact show. But I like your point about the Ravens defense, because I feel like we're still calibrating to the Ravens defense, which I mentioned earlier, number one against the run in success rate allowed. They're 16th in dropback success rate allowed. I will say coming off the game that they had against Buffalo, great defensive game plan from Zach Ward. That was the first one where I felt like, okay, this looks like the Ravens defense we know, where they just have way too much. You can't handle what they're going to throw at you. Very different receiver room, you know, freaking Keon Coleman and Mac Hollins outside. Now you've got Jamar Chase and T. Higgins, a little bit of a different beast there. So that will be an interesting thing to watch. And the only player I would say, just want a quick temperature check on this player, like Zay Flowers. I mean, he's a guy that had great usage in the first couple weeks of the season, and now he's kind of completely—he's just not been a big factor from a production standpoint because of the way they're playing right now. And you know, Lamar even said it this week: like, we don't care about your parlays, any of that stuff. We're out here trying to win games, and we know how they're going to want to win games and how they can win games right now.
Yeah, it's a huge worry in this one, because I think they can run against the Bengals, and if they come into this with the same game plan where it's going to be 40 rush attempts and Derrick Henry is going to have 108. I mean, Derrick Henry's gone over 150 in the last two games. And they might very well come in thinking, yeah, this is going to be the Derrick Henry show with a little bit of Justice Hill, and we'll throw it a dozen times, and we're coming out of there with a 20-point win. Like, that is very much in play, and that's a disaster scenario for Flowers, for anybody. For Andrews, obviously, it'll mean that Andrews is only on the field for like 45-50% of the snaps. That's a bad scene for the entire receiving core.
Yeah, we all have Zay Flowers ranked around like wide receiver 21, but that's only because I scroll past that and the names get pretty bleak pretty quick.
The names get bad. It's a bye week. You know, it's hard.
And like, hey, if they do have to throw the ball, he's going to be the guy that mostly gets it. So he's a very difficult player right now in fantasy. That's for sure. Okay. Final game here. Buffalo at Houston. I mean, 1 p.m. game. Got to be kidding me, Andy Behrens. What are we doing here? What are we looking at in this game?
The top games are so good this week. This one's super fun because this is the, you know, now we have a Steph Diggs revenge game that I'm sure matters to him. No question about it. That's fun. I think we get almost everybody back for the Texans, right? Tank Dell was a practice participant on Wednesday. That's generally a good sign. Joe Mixon didn't practice on Wednesday, but he did return last Friday to a limited practice. So I think that's a good sign. Like, if we get a fully operational Texans offense, Nico Collins, the whole show against Buffalo, that is just good fun, because Buffalo, they kind of need a get right game here, because they really, I mean, they were handled by the Ravens last week. That was it, like, in a kind of jarring way. Like, I thought that was going to be a classic game that hit a big number, and Buffalo just could not hang, and couldn't deal with the run game that they got. Not that, you know, I don't think a Joe Mixon coming off an ankle injury is going to be the, you know, same sort of impact player against them that Derrick Henry was. They're not stylistically all that similar. They're not, but I think Joe Mixon is good. Mm-hmm. And I think they can expose some of the same things. So there's just, we got a bunch of stars in this game. We need to, it would be helpful if we saw James Cook with a little bit of a comeback after a disappointing week last week. Khalil Shakir has an ankle issue, but has otherwise looked spectacular. So a lot of fun names in this one. I agree with you. I can't believe this is like a noon kickoff. That's wild.
Yeah, this is generally just like a calibration game, because I think like all the guys that you generally want to play in this game, Collins, Diggs, Josh Allen, Kincaid probably at tight end, you know, James Cook, Joe Mixon, if he's out there, you're probably playing all those guys.
You just got to play him, yeah.
You got to play him. This should be a high scoring game, but there's two pretty good defensive coaches here, so don't just pencil it in as the shootout of the week. This game could go either way. But I think it's a lot of just, okay, Bills wide receivers, like I said, they just had a disaster game against Baltimore. Can, like, Keon Coleman step up? Can they get Curtis Samuel more on the field? You know, Samuel's a guy who's probably just been dropped in mass, and like, I get it, because he's not playing at all and you got to score points, but like, you watch the film on this team, they need Curtis Samuel on the field. So especially if Shakir is not out there, can he give them anything? And then, yeah, Mixon in the Texans run game, man. I mean, I think it's pretty clear that Mixon makes a pretty big difference to this team's run game. So you're playing all of these guys for sure. We'll see what Tank Dell does coming off another injury, unfortunately. A lot of things at play here, but generally I think we know where the ball's going in this one, which is nice. Andy, anything else before we let you go?
No, it's a loaded week. It's a fun week. I wish I had some better rosters rolling this week, but I'm looking forward to it.
Not a single Bears mentioned from Andy Barnes either. So look at the maturity. Look at
kind of in my feelings about the Bears right now. I'm very conflicted about some things.
Totally understandable. Totally understandable. Yeah, if we get to almost minute 50 on the pod and it's the first Bears reference, we've done pretty well. So that is pretty good. That is the note we are going to end it on with you, Andy. Appreciate you as always. We will see you as always after the dust settles on Sunday. After the break, Tara Roberts joins the show to share her make or break players for week 4, including at least one guy we've kind of already said is a little bit shaky heading into this week, right after this. Joining us now, as she does every week here on the preview show, is Tara Roberts. Tara, what's going on?
I'm doing fantastic again. Only downside is that I've got, like, you know, entire fantasy benches full of people that are on IR, pup list, and on bye week. So yeah, it's not a fun, deep week, but we're making it work. We got this.
Well, I don't know if we got this, but we're definitely making it work. I'm sure you've got this. So Andy and I started the top of the show basically having the same discussion. So I have to ask him, I have to ask you, just like I asked him, who is the weirdest player that you're starting this week?
Braylon Allen. I'm rolling with Braylon Allen again as a starting running, as my RB2. This is 3 weeks in a row. It is, in fact, a Christian McCaffrey league where someone had already drafted Jordan Mason. So I was up a creek on that one well before he got the injuries. So we're making it work here. Me, Chuba Hubbard, and Braylon Allen. We got this.
And you said Braylon Allen, then you said again, that made the answer perfect. So we all got to do some weird stuff here in the fantasy football season and start some players that, you know, we don't feel that great about. But hey, at least Braylon Allen is carving himself out a nice little role there in the New York Jets backfield. Let's dive into this here, Tara. this segment, as always, not really a strict start this guy, sit this guy. You know, we don't do that spoon feeding nonsense here on this particular program, but we do kind of want to paint the picture, range of outcomes of some of these players that could make or break your lineup this week, Tara, as we do every week. Let's start off with a guy who Andy and I discussed a little bit in the earlier part of the show, and I'm fascinated to kind of hear you weigh in on his, what I think are wide range of outcomes this particular week. That's Baltimore Ravens wide receiver Zay Flowers.
Zay Flowers, I really didn't think that he would ever be in our make or break considering where we were drafting him and how comfortable we were feeling. But here we are coming off of 2 weeks of very disappointing performances for him. He started off the season fantastic. Target leader in terms of the receiving core, aside from that one little blip that we had there with Isaiah Likely. Everything was looking fantastic. And then Derrick Henry came and started dominating. And I don't think it's a coincidence that those first two games, Derrick Henry saw fewer than 20 carries. Lamar Jackson had more than 30 attempts. Zay Flowers had perfectly fine, reasonable games. Then over the past 2 weeks, we get that massive uptick in production. Derrick Henry is now carrying the ball 24, 25 times. All of a sudden, the Ravens have this massive drop in pass volume. And we've got Zay Flowers here for the past 2 weeks with a total of 6 fantasy points in half PPR, 4 receptions on 6 targets, 30 yards. Again, those are totals for 2 games. Yeah, it's been a bad, bad stretch here. That's bad for one game, let alone 2 as a whole. But this week, we're feeling just a little bit more positive here, optimistic here, because at least they get a defensive break here. The Ravens are facing Cincinnati, a defense that has absolutely allowed, you know, strong performances by wide receiver ones. At the same time, and this is the reason why it's still a make or break, we get this wonderful matchup and we're thinking, okay, full go on him. But the problem is that we're now also looking at the Cincinnati defense that's a complete layup on the ground as well. So if the Ravens want to, they can just continue and say, nope, we're just Derrick Henry all the way, 100% the volume. We're just abandon the pass because we know that we can absolutely demolish Cincinnati with Derrick Henry. We make it work. And it puts him in this make or break situation here. But given the matchup, I want to be on the side of, personally for me, leaning towards not benching him and trying to see if we can experiment here and say, okay, good pass matchup, more pass volume, Flowers will be fine. So it's one of these kind of situations where maybe coming off of these 2 poor performances, you're thinking about benching him, but there is some bright side here to him. He could have a high upside game.
Yeah, I think a lot of the points there you just mentioned exactly lay out sort of the problem with Flowers this week and the volatility overall. Bengals are 31st in rushing success rate allowed. The Ravens are 32nd, dead last in the NFL in neutral pass rate over the last 2 weeks when they've really gotten this Derrick Henry thing rolling. Why would they not want to just saddle up the big dog with 20 plus carries again, you know, in this particular matchup? So it's like, yeah, Flowers could come away with this one with another 5-target game. And we know his usage is mostly short and underneath, which I don't love. I'd love to see them. You know, I think it was pointed out in the game broadcast last week, Chris Collinsworth pointed out that they were using Zay Flowers to like stretch out the field, like using his speed to open things up for other players underneath. A lot of it ended up being Justice Hill, but there were a few plays for like Nelson Agholor and some of the tight ends and things like that. Not Mark Andrews. He doesn't exist anymore. But some of the other players on Baltimore's roster, I'd love to see them use that speed and uncork it maybe once downfield. So it is very much like a touchdown or bust type of play here for Zay Flowers. But I'm with you. He probably ends up being a flex play for most people. I think, Tara, it's just about when we outline the range of outcomes like this, hopefully it just gives people sort of what to expect from him and then kind of how to adjust the rest of your roster along with it.
Yeah, for sure. If you've been coming into it with a negative point of view, there is some hope here. So you have options in terms of where you want to go.
All right, your next player here is Denver Broncos running back Javonte Williams. What a journey it's been for Javonte Williams so far.
Oh, what a journey. And I feel like maybe I'm not the best person to try and be positive about Javonte Williams for, because I, quite frankly, I 100% wrote him off before the season began. You will not find another player that, you know, sometimes, Matt, with players that you don't want to draft him, but you always end up with a couple of shares because you're playing multiple leagues, or you say, oh, yeah, I like the value here. he is definitely not that player for me. Zero shares of this one. Yeah.
Harsh.
It has not been. Yeah, I'm so sorry, Javonte. But heading into the season, I just didn't feel positively about any of this. And 4 weeks into the season, he has 19 more rushing yards than Bo Nix. This offense has been a complete mess. And early on, we had this first game where Jaleel McLaughlin kind of looked like, oh my gosh, maybe he's taking over. But, you know, in a positive direction here for Javonte, I guess I can get there. He at least has looked over the past several games like he is the clear lead back in that offense. Particularly last week, his best performance of the season, had 16 carries. He had a strong performance that you could look at and say, okay, maybe if we really get him in an advantageous matchup, he's got the bulk of the carries. Maybe the offense can flow a little bit better. And we can finally get a situation where we get a Javonte Williams. Let's even say like a mid-tier RB2. Just a decent game from him to be usable. And if there is one week for that to happen, I feel like it's this week against a Vegas defense that is giving up over 100 rushing yards easily on average to opposing running backs. They've allowed the eighth most fantasy points to opposing running backs. It's an excellent matchup. You want to lean into it. I would like to lean into it in my mind. At the same time, you're like, oh my gosh, it's Javonte Williams. And the upside hasn't been there. Touchdowns haven't been there. Maybe if we could get maybe an uptick in receiving volume, something to give us some kind of positivity that we can lean into with him. I feel like the matchup and the situation gives upside, but at the same time, he could easily deliver a sub 5 fantasy point performance yet again, because the floor is just such a major concern with him.
Yeah, you know, Javonte, it's tough because I just don't think he's ever looked like the same player after that devastating knee injury. I was hoping like, okay, this year maybe he's back after, you know, kind of that first year last year. Did not. I just don't think it's working out. You know, they looked like they might want to replace him with Tyler Bidet, the player who unfortunately suffered a pretty serious injury in last week's game. In the first quarter of that game against the Jets, it was snaps. Bidet 4, Jaleel McLaughlin 3, Javonte 5, and then just split pretty much just one carry for all those guys. Routes was like 3-2-3. Just complete mess of a backfield. Maybe with Bidet removed, Javonte gets more work, but this is still an offense, Tara, that's 28th in yards per play. It's a committee no matter what. We don't really want committee running backs on a offense that's 28th in yards per play. I do think that this is not advice for this week, obviously, but Audric Estime is a guy who's on IR. He was probably dropped in some leagues. I feel like with the way Javonte has played so far, obviously, I think they kind of wanted to replace him a little bit with Tyler Bidet. Maybe Estime at some point becomes the guy, and maybe Williams is phased out here. I'm concerned about Javonte overall.
Yeah, the fact that they gave him those carries last week makes me lean into thinking that they're just going to continue to say, okay, let's give this guy a try. Let's try opportunity. It seems like an open opportunity kind of offense there across the board, even at wide receiver, where we've seen random receivers pop up and lead and have higher targets than Cortland Sutton over there. So it just feels like one where random things can happen. And even in good matchups, you don't 100% know where they're heading.
Let's go from one messy offense to another. If I mention that the Broncos are 28th in yards per play, I should mention that the Cleveland Browns, the next team we're going to talk about a player from, they're 32nd in yards per play. David Njoku, Browns tight end, who is coming off an injury, but looks like he's back in our lives here.
Yes, I feel like we talk about the Cleveland offense and we always just feel like it's just, again, another complete mess offense. At the same time, I feel like I'm not so afraid of David Njoku if he comes back into this game. And this is an if, but I never get to talk about tight ends on this show. So I felt like I would take the opportunity here because
we're
doing a make or break kind of situation. 99% of the tight ends lean into the break. So you can't really include them in a lot of this conversation. You hope
I have to interrupt you and say, I think that you are the only fantasy analyst, certainly on this show or probably throughout the entire industry. It's like, you know, I really never get to talk about tight ends. So let me take a chance to do it here. So I admire your bravery on this one.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Just, you know, innovation over here for me at all times. So we'll do an innovation with David Njoku here. And when I look at David Njoku, you know, heading into the season, I was a little bit concerned about whether or not Deshaun Watson would be able to give him the level of pass volume that we had seen last year. David Njoku is one of those guys who I have loved throughout his entire career. And it's always been an issue of if he can just get the volume, we know he has the talent. We know that if you throw 10 targets at him, he is an incredible player. It's just finding the right offensive situation and the right quarterback to actually give him that opportunity. And while I don't know if we're going to see that level of usage here, even in a fantastic matchup, what I do know is that, again, tight end has been absolutely awful. And when we look at David Njoku, even in just week one, playing just 28 snaps, still at that, he got, you know, enough to be an average points per game, literally like a top 10 tight end 10 in half PPR, outperforming guys like Kyle Pitts, Travis Kelce, Sam Laporta. So we can't be picky here. I do think he has a valid role within that offense. And usually with guys coming off of multi-week injuries, you're like, they might slow roll him in there, maybe limited and not going to see a lot of action here. But quite frankly, I think maybe a limited version of David Njoku, a 50% version of David Njoku, especially in this matchup, could give us more upside than a lot of streaming tight ends. So I'm honestly not as scared of this one as you might feel like I should be.
I love this call out for multiple reasons. First of all, David Njoku is 77% rostered in Yahoo leagues right now. I know most of the people listening to this podcast are screaming, not in my league, big fella. I get it. But there are leagues out there where he was dropped because of the injury. I mean, shoot, that is fewer. That's a lower roster percentage than like Pat Freiermuth or Evan Ingram, also coming off of an injury. Mark Andrews, with all he's done for you, it's a lower roster percentage than Mark Andrews. So, the other reason I like you pointing this out is because we know that Nick Chubb is not going to play this week, but his window to be activated, the 21-day window, has been open here. And I was doing some, because I hate myself and I do have to write a preview column, I was doing some research on the Browns offense this morning, because I have thought for years it is a fascinating football experiment. You know, Kevin Stefanski trying to mold what he likes to do, you know, these, and what the offense has been under Nick Chubb is kind of the central figure. Heavy personnel, under center runs, under center play action, condensed sort of approach. That's what his style has been. Whereas Deshaun Watson, we know, is not that's not the Deshaun Watson world. Deshaun Watson, it's like spread the field, get into empty, shotgun, all of that stuff. Well, so far through 4 weeks, Tara Roberts, that like trying to make the offense more Deshaun Watson centric has been an abject disaster. He leads the NFL in dropbacks out of empty this year, and he's averaged 0.8 adjusted net yards per attempt on those plays. Only Daniel Jones, the great Daniel Jones, comes in lower among quarterbacks with 20 plus dropbacks out of empty. Watson's 3.12 adjusted net yards per attempt on plays with 3 plus receivers on the field is the lowest among any quarterback to play 4 games this year. And like, people can engage in kind of the debates and the circular, like, oh, is it his poor play or is it a struggling offensive line? Like, what's the main culprit here? Bottom line, those plays suck. They don't work. So I say that and bring it up with David Njoku because, again, more tight ends on the field, fewer wide receivers on the field. That can hopefully be a thing that as we see this offense, I don't know what they're going to do at the quarterback position, but as they, probably going to transition away from that identity, I think Njoku's role in the offense will become more important. His playing time will be what it should be, and more targets probably going his way as a result.
Completely agree.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sorry to read all these disgusting stats off, but I had to see it. I had to see it. I had to read it, so you all had to hear it out there. Okay, let's move on to the next player here from the Raiders offense. Another great, Terry, you're just absolutely dominating in terms of some of the best offenses in the league that. Here.
I didn't even notice it. I kind of went on the trend here in terms, well, you know what? That's why they are make or break players. If they were all playing for the best, if this was all Houston and they all had CJ Stroud throwing to him, we would be saying, yeah, start. Right. No. But this one is still more positive here because Trey Tucker's having himself a little breakout here over the past couple of weeks. Total of 32 fantasy points in half PPR over the past 2 weeks. And definitely breakout compared to weeks 1 and 2, where he had a total of 5 fantasy points. So he's on the up here. Snap counts, targets, receptions, yardage, touchdowns, everything is rising. And that was even with Devontae Adams before that. But now we've got Devontae Adams sidelined with this hamstring and general disdain for the Raiders offense. Yeah. You kind of saw it coming. Now we've got him out, and that just kind of, has opened up the door for Trey Tucker, who I feel like was somebody who, maybe not everybody, but he was one of those preseason darlings, those offseason darlings of looking at him and thinking about the possibility. He's young, he's exciting, he looks electric on the field. And now we've got him stepping up, and he's coming off of an excellent performance last week, and you want to lean into it because with Devontae Adams out, this is a perfect opportunity for him to truly ascend. But unfortunately, he has now hit at the wrong, the exact wrong time here with a matchup in week 5 against the Denver Broncos, who is extremely tough against the pass. And the reason why this kind of makes it more of a make or break situation, because, if this was a situation where I 100% knew that Patrick Surtain was going to be on him, we all know what Patrick Surtain does. This would be a shutdown situation. We saw what he did to Mike Evans, to DK Metcalf, to George Pickett. He's just, these top tier receivers, they're getting shut down by this elite shutdown corner. But because we don't truly know what the identity in pecking order within this receiving core is now for the Ravens, we don't know who is going to actually have the opportunity to step up. Because the wide receiver, too, that hasn't gotten the coverage of that tough matchup with Surtain has actually done fairly well, decently well in Denver. We had Tyler Lockett do very well in week 1. Chris Godwin had a solid performance playing off of Mike Evans. So it's perfectly fine to potentially play him if he doesn't get that coverage. The problem is that we don't know. If I knew, I could feel more confident in saying, yeah, I'm okay with rolling with Trey Tucker this week as a flex option. But it's a murky, murky situation where we've got this ascending player in a bad matchup, and can we afford to risk it? A lot of this depends on bye weeks and injuries and lineup situations. It's risky, but he looks fantastic out there.
I tell you what, if Trey Tucker is being started by anybody, he would definitely qualify as the weirdest player that people are starting. In little question I asked you to start this, I'll say this for Trey Tucker, and kind of maybe to give us a clue as to Pat Surtain, who he may be covering. Tucker has run just 16% of his routes from the slot, which is the fewest among any of the relevant Raiders pass catchers. So it would be odd to me for the Broncos to just hey, stick Pat Surtain on Trey Tucker, right? But at the same time, typically these shadow man coverage corners are going to stick to the perimeter. They're not going to follow guys in the slot. Is he going to track Brock Bowers around the field? Is it going to be Jacoby Myers, who was still a 70.8% outside player last week? Now that I'm reading all the data, I'm not sure. I honestly have no idea. So I will say this. It's fascinating just to kind of watch this game and see the further impact on Brock Bowers. If none of these wide receivers kind of step up, well, none of them are going to be Devontae Adams, but if none of them step up as a vertical option, which Tucker does at least bring some speed, but if none of them step up as a vertical option, that's going to condense the field for the Raiders, which is going to make it harder for Bowers to pile up these gimme catches that he kind of had in the early, and I don't say that with any disrespect, but just kind of the gimme catches that he had in the early part of the season. Okay, let's go to an offense that actually does sometimes score points, sometimes this year. Dallas Cowboys, you want to talk about Jalen Tolbert, their young-ish wide receiver there for Dallas.
Yes, Jalen Tolbert. I feel like this is another dark horse one here that not a lot of people are talking about here because it is potentially a deeper play. It's more of a heave-ho kind of situation here. But we have Brandon Cooks out for week 5. Tolbert is likely to be the guy that sees an increase in snaps and targets, and he's already really made a little bit of an impact early on. Again, just made a decent performance in week 1, showed some upside, 6 receptions, 9 targets, 82 yards against a tougher matchup against New Orleans, had a fine fine performance against Baltimore, or performance against Baltimore as well, where he caught a touchdown. Last week, underwhelming, but a lot of that probably didn't have to do with him. This offense is very focused in on CeeDee Lamb and Jake Ferguson, so there might not be a ton of opportunity for Jalen Tolbert to step up. But we would be remiss to not talk about the possibility, because this was another guy here, kind of like Trey Tucker, who preseason was getting a little buzz from people in terms of somebody that could step up with Dallas not making the investment at wide receiver two there, thinking somebody has to step up. Is Brandon Cooks kind of fading here, a little bit older, as we've seen over the past several games? He's just kind of really disappeared from the field and been very unproductive. So the Cowboys are looking for somebody to step up. And if Jalen Tolbert can be that guy that they feel like they can trust to give additional opportunities, he could play very well off of CeeDee Lamb and Jake Ferguson. But again, this is a very boom-bust situation, especially because we've got a situation where the Cowboys are facing the Pittsburgh defense. This might not be. Now, granted, last week was a kind of an odd matchup there, but maybe this is not a situation where they're aggressively pursuing volume through the air, maybe a lower scoring game, kind of a situation, again, like last week against the Giants, where there's not a ton to go around outside of those first two looks. So this could be a boom performance for him, or it could be a bust performance for him, kind of a make or break in deeper league situation if you're having to go and find somebody with all of these struggles on bye weeks.
Yeah, I wonder where we see CeeDee Lamb take most of his snaps in this game, because obviously when they have Brandon Cooks out there and it's Tolbert, you know, they can throw CeeDee in the slot. He's a 56% slot player on the season. He can obviously win outside as well. I mentioned this because Joey Porter Jr. Is a great cornerback for the Pittsburgh Steelers. I think he's one of the young, like, ascending corners in the league. Much not to Pat Surtain's degree, but he's one of these guys that will track top receivers, but he doesn't go into the slot. 2% of his snaps have been in the slot this season, according to Pro Football Focus. Does that mean Tolbert ends up tangled up with him? And that would obviously, I don't know if that matchup favors good old Jalen Tolbert, but you're right to point out, like, Brandon Cooks, number one, not an impact player really anymore at this point, not consistently. And Tolbert's a guy that they've been high on at times. Producer Colin, a noted Cowboys homer, wants you to remember the name Ryan Flournoy, a 6'1", 200-pound rookie out of Southeast Missouri. He's a sixth-round pick. We'll see. I mean, this is what we're talking about with Dallas. They got a lot of questions in the receiver room. So Tolbert's a guy, I think, at least, like, if you have deeper leagues, I would at least stick on the back of your bench and just, like, see what happens. So even if you don't have to start him this week, I think he's a good name to mention here. You brought up Dontayvion Wicks, Tara, at the start here. Yes. as a weird player that you're starting. I mean, I got Dontayvion Wicks. I'm excited to start him in a few spots because, I mean, I'm a big Dontayvion Wicks fan. I know you are a Packers fan. We also know that Christian Watson likely on a multi-week absence. We just found out literally right now, Matt LaFleur says that Romeo Dobbs, a personal issue, did not practice here on Thursday, and when asked about it, said that the Packers are going to take it day by day in terms of Dobbs' availability for week 5. So we could be down 2 Packers receivers this week, which means, hey, Dontayvion Wicks, pretty exciting. So Tara, Dontayvion Wicks, should the people be excited if they got him?
Yeah, let's close it out on a good one here. Save the best for last here with Dontayvion Wicks. The upside is always there for him. It's just a matter of the opportunities. And it's weird as a Packers fan. Sometimes, you know, I get Christian Watson. I get the upside. I get the investment that they've made into him. But at the same time, you know, Dontayvion Wicks steps on that field. And while he does have his faults, for sure, and inconsistencies there, he has such big play talent and really feels like he just, despite those issues, has earned the trust of Jordan Love, to where Jordan Love will just keep coming at him over and over and over again. And we saw it in week 4, where it was an overall rough game early on for Green Bay. Efficiency for Jordan Love was not fantastic, but 13 targets to Dontayvion Wicks immediately stepped in after that early injury to Christian Watson, managed to catch 4 or 5 of them. I think that was not so much on him, just again, a rough day for Jordan Love's efficiency. 78 yards and 2 touchdowns fantastic game. Somehow, some way in half PPR, the Green Bay literally managed to produce two top three wide receivers. And quite frankly, it could happen again this week. I feel like I'm not being facetious on that one. We're talking about the LA Rams. That has been a little tasty matchup against the pass here. Fortunately, they're just dealing with some issues, and it's just been an overall good matchup, especially for wide receiver twos as well. So that even leans more into favor of Dontavian Wicks here if he gets the opportunity, especially with Romeo Dobbs out. But he's just got such an incredibly high ceiling. So he's one of those players that you stick into your lineup. And the possibility of him having a 20 plus point fantasy game is absolutely in the realm of possibility easily here. We're talking about this matchup with the Rams this week being very favorable. Again, I talked about the wide receiver twos. Just wanted to talk about a few big play guys that have happened here. So again, these big play, deep threats, Jameson Williams, Marvin Harrison Jr., Juwan Jennings, these are all the receivers that have absolutely gone off against the Rams. And Dontavian Wicks does fit that profile. I think this is a perfect setup for him to have a big performance, and I do expect him to deliver in week five.
I am expecting him to deliver as well. I'm a big Dontavian Wicks fan, as people listening to this podcast know. I mean, Jaden Reed's the guy here. He's the number one, but I think Wicks is probably their second best receiver, at least in my opinion.
Yeah,
he beats man coverage, good route runner. He can play multiple positions, which is key here. Like, if Dobbs is not out there, I think Wicks is their best candidate to take most of the X receiver snaps. So he'll get those vertical looks as well. Definitely a guy that, you know, I don't know, sit down, like, do rankings, everything like that, the whole deal. But, like, he's a guy I'd be trying to get in my lineup this week. Yeah. I have a tough, like, a couple of the Wicks spots I have him in, I got to make some tough decisions in terms of, like, do I play him over this guy, whatever. Like, you know, actually, the player I'm going to talk about in my keys to winning segment, I am debating between Dontavian Wicks and that player. So, really tough, Tara. Just, like, give me off the cuff wide receiver rankings. You think he's, like, a around like kind of 30, 35, or are we talking like 24-ish top like range this week?
Oh, gosh. I'm going to split the difference there. Wide receiver 30, maybe. He could put maybe, yeah. You know, if Dobbs is out, I could push him a little bit higher. But that range is where you start to get into making those tough decisions of, you know, am I sitting him for a George Pickens or something? Like, it just gets very difficult. So, yeah, I think 30 is a nice little spot for him.
I have him at wide receiver 30 right now before the Dobbs Perfect. Thing becomes official. So, yeah, I think we're right along the same page here. But just mentioned it. Let's toss it to our keys to winning, presented by Toyota, the official automotive partner of the NFL. And for week five, our key to winning, as it always is picking the guys that are going to truly make the difference in your flex spot. So, Tara, give me one player that fantasy managers could potentially be debating putting in that final starting spot. But you're saying, hey, it's time. Let's take a shot on this player. They're going to help you come out with a big win this week.
Oh, I'm so ready to talk about Brian Thomas. I'm so excited. We started off with those first 3 weeks where he was showing promise. But again, the Jags offense was another just a complete mess offense. But last week, they looked mildly competent. Trevor Lawrence, you know, pass volume was, oh, it was all right. But threw a couple of touchdowns, and the big beneficiary there, one of them was Brian Thomas. Finally arrived, breakout performance there. And I expect it to continue this week, trending up against the Indianapolis defense, which has struggled to stop literally anyone. Again, coming off this best performance for Thomas last week, 6 receptions, 9 targets, 86 yards, a touchdown. It was beautiful. It was dominating. It was the perfect performance that we want to see him continue and carry on to this week. I think this is where we're going to finally see Trevor Lawrence break that 300-yard threshold. Like, cross our fingers, it's finally going to happen. And we'll get a 100-yard performance from Brian Thomas with a touchdown and give him that wide receiver 1 week.
I love it. Brian Thomas Jr. probably about the only thing that's going well for Jacksonville's offense right now.
Yeah.
So really good player to highlight. I'm actually going to stick in that same game and talk about Colts wide receiver Michael Pittman, who in the first few weeks of the season, really rocky start, right? He's an up and down, mostly down player. The Colts passing offense was volatile. He comes off his best week of the season last week, and I know people are thinking, hey, is it a fluke because Joe Flacco was back there, right? Well, honestly, I don't care if it's Anthony Richardson or Joe Flacco in this game. I am starting Michael Pittman this week against the Jacksonville Jaguars. First of all, the Colts passing game is going to be in the spotlight in this one. It looks like they're not going to have Jonathan Taylor So more of the burden is going to be placed on the aerial attack. So whether it's Richardson or whether it's Flacco, I think they're going to have to up the dropbacks this week. That works out well against this particular defense because the Jacksonville Jaguars, according to Fantasy Points data, play man coverage at 46.3% rate. That is the highest in the NFL. And it's not exactly going well for them because they rank 30th in EPA per dropback allowed. So a lot of man coverage, a lot of big plays allowed. And again, even if it's Richardson under center, let's not forget that Michael Pittman had two catches for 60 yards before Richardson left the game and Flacco came in. So obviously, yeah, Flacco would up kind of the projections for these short and intermediate routes that Pittman and my guy Josh Downs run. I definitely like playing Josh Downs this week as well, but I feel like Pittman's a guy who's going to get most of the volume and is somebody that can give you a steady performance with maybe even a high ceiling, regardless of which quarterback is back there. He is somebody I'm trying to get into my lineups this week. Like I said, Tara, I'm not sure if I'm going to play Michael Pittman or if I'm going to play Dontayvion Wicks. That's my big debate, but I do like Michael Pittman here this week.
Oh, I love Michael Pittman. I tell you, I had to bench him last week. Of course, the first time I decided I'm going to bench Michael Pittman and he goes off. So we're putting him back in and I'm counting on you. I'm trusting your advice here. I'm putting him back in my lineup and he's going to hit this week.
Well, great, because I have him in two leagues that like two managed leagues. I benched him in one. I played him in the other. So I about 50-50 hated myself after week four. So you know what? If it doesn't work out, if it sucks for you, it's going to suck for me. So we can commiserate, or you can just, you know, rip into me on the show next week. Yeah, you can just rip into me on the show next week. Hopefully Dontayvion Wicks comes through for both of us. Tell the people what you're working on the rest of the week that they can check out.
Make or break column. Go read it. You can learn more about all these guys, diving more into the stats. And then, of course, you guys will see me Sunday with Matt on Fantasy Live.
Yes, make sure to check out Fantasy Football Live noon Eastern every single week. We got a Jets-Vikings game to be talking about as it's happening this week, so that's pretty electric. That's going to do it for today's show. Appreciate all of you for listening. Appreciate everybody. A lot of great month for the podcast last week. Just want to thank everybody for listening, engaging, watching on YouTube, wherever you're doing it. If you like the show, and clearly some people like the show, if so many people are listening and watching, I would love it if you could leave us a rating, review, tell the people that join me on the show what great work, like Tara and Scott and Dalton and Nate and Sal and Andy. Tell them they're doing a great job. Hey, even tweet at producer Colin, at producer Colin on Twitter, and you could tell him that he's doing a great job. Everybody's doing a great job. Appreciate the hell out of everybody that listens, watches, participates, and works on the show alongside me. So thanks again to Toyota, the official automotive partner of the NFL. Next time you hear from us, Sunday's going to be in the books. And Andy Behrens and I will be back to break it all down. Until then, we are out.